International Podcast. I'm your host, Kat Hegberg.
And I'm Kyle Rebar.
And today, Kyle and I are once again joined by our dear friend and awesome human and yoga teacher, Diane Bondi.
Aw, thanks. I love you guys.
Aw, we love you too, Diane. Thanks for joining us today. Listeners, if you want to learn a lot more about Diane and her yoga story and hear more conversations between her and us, then you can check out our podcast on Yoga and Social Justice, Part 2. We will link to that in the show notes. But today, we are going to talk about a topic that is near and dear to all of our hearts, I think, yoga and the internet. Now, we have a Yoga Talk podcast from maybe a couple years back on yoga and the internet, and we will also plug for that one, link to it in the show notes. But we really wanted to delve in a little bit deeper today with Diane here and talk about some of our experiences and the benefits and the challenges of the online yoga world, or as I call it, the yoga internets.
The yoga interwebs, yes. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So, Diane, can you tell us a little bit about your online yoga life, what it is you do, how you teach online, and all of that, all the good stuff.
I got really interested in teaching online maybe in 2012. I've been doing it for a while. And what happened was a lot of my friends were having babies and had really busy schedules. So they would say to me, hey, can you tape a class for me that I can do when my kids go to bed? I can't come to your studio and do a class. And I thought, okay, perfect. So I said to my husband, let's do a bunch of stuff and I'll just save it on a, you know, a junk drive or whatever and I'll pass it off. And he said, you know what, why don't we offer it as a bonus to our students in our yoga studio that they, if they can't get to the studio, they have the online so they can go online. So he set up a website called Yogastea and we just would tape stuff in the studio and put it up. And that way everybody had access to it. And it was just initially something free for the members of our studio. And then more and more people got interested in it because I would post, you know, about it on social media. And so then we opened it up to anybody who wanted to have an experience of yoga that was a little bit more diverse. The teachers on the site are, you know, in bigger bodies or are ethnically and culturally diverse so that you could see a broader section of people doing yoga. So people maybe feel comfortable doing yoga there because they say people who have the same body shape or size or look like them. So that's how it kind of started. And then I had people who wanted to do privates with me, so I started doing a Skype class. So they would book a Skype class with me, and we would hope that Skype would work, because, you know, technology can be a big pain in the ass when it's not working. Mm-hmm. And so people would book it, and I did that for free. We would do, like, 15-minute classes, just little classes, to make it accessible. So as long as you had an internet connection, then you could have a yoga class. And I thought that was a way that if you couldn't afford a $50, $150, $200 membership, whatever it is people are charging for memberships, then you could just do a little snippet for free. And then maybe that would help you build your own practice at home.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And that sounds like 2012. You've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
And where can our listeners find your work online now if they're interested in practicing with you?
I'm kind of all over. So I'm here with you at Yoga International.
That's right. Lots of great classes.
Lots of classes on there. And I have a yoga, online yoga studio called Yogastea. So it's spelled Yogastea. Listen to me. Yogastea.com. You can also just go to DianeBondi.com and you'll see a link to it there. And that's just the fabulous local teachers in my area. And then at one point I put out a call to anybody in North America, anywhere in the world who wanted to submit a class, you know. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, so I had a teacher from Jamaica. I had a teacher from Europe, like, would just submit their stuff. So I just wanted to give teachers who wouldn't ordinarily also have an opportunity to teach online to teach online. So that was fun. So you can catch me there. And every other week, so the next week I'll be doing this, I believe, is the week of the 15th. I do a live stream for Gaiam.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I just
I
do
caught your last one.
My last one. So we just do initially it was supposed to be a 15-minute class, but I don't know how to teach for 15 minutes. So I was teaching, and then I went to turn off the Facebook live stream, and it was like 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So I've managed to figure out how to teach for 30 minutes now, so usually it's between 25 and 30 minutes.
Nice.
What kind of feedbacks do you get when you're doing live streams or compared to the kind of feedback you'll get on a video that's just on your own website? Or smaller platforms, I guess.
I find the feedback is pretty similar. I put it out in all my social networks, so I get a lot of people who are on Yogastea who will come and practice with me on Gaiam for a live class, and people who are actually in my yoga community. So the feedback for me is pretty positive, but of course you always get a troll or two.
And oh, those trolls.
Those trolls. And I've taught, my husband every time says to me, don't feed them, don't feed them, that's what they want. So I've been pretty fortunate, plus I do it as crowdsourcing. So I'll say, I'm teaching a class next week, what would you like me to teach? And it kind of happened that way for the Yoga International live stream, the Handless Vinyasa.
Yeah, oh, that was fun.
That was tough, too. Yeah, like my legs were shaking after that. I put it out there, and somebody said, Handless Vinyasa. And so that, you know, I shared that everywhere because lots of people have been asking me for that.
What other are common questions do you get? Do people have a lot of things that they ask you about? And do you have any of those questions that you can address on the podcast here?
Yeah, I have people ask me, how do I get started? I have a lot of people who are working with a larger body, working with disabilities, or are older. So I get a lot of those people. I'm 67, I'm 75, I want to take up a yoga practice. Where do I start? How do I get started? I don't even know what kind of mat I need to use. I get that a lot. Or people ask me for specific poses. So the biggest one I usually get is, how do I step my foot forward from down dog? That's
a burning question.
So I actually made a video and put it up on my YouTube site so that, because I get it all the time. So I just put it up there so that people can see, and it's difficult. But I think I actually have two videos up there because it's such a recurring question.
Oh, yeah. We have a couple articles and videos on that too here on YI. And we'll link up to all of that. Yeah, yeah. And still, that's some of our most popular content because that is just, it's a frustrating transition.
It is.
But it's in pretty much every vinyasa class.
It is. And I think, and sometimes it's discouraging because when I started out, for me, it took me a year to actually step my foot forward. And I had to figure out lots of different things. So I'm working with more size in the front of my body. So I now have to swing my leg out to the edge of the mat. So I was thinking, how could you do that? Or can I lower the opposite leg down, the opposite knee down that I'm stepping forward? Because I would see people struggling to step forward, and then the class is flowing along, and they're still kind of stuck where they are. So I just stopped teaching it altogether. So anything that I teach step back. Because you have to have open hips, you have to have strong abdominals, you can't have anything in the way if you just want to glide your foot forward. And I see more often than not people struggle with that than actually people being successful doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think stepping back is like so much more of a balance challenge anyway. Like, it's way harder in some ways, even though it's more accessible. So it's definitely not like an easy way out.
You're doing this. Yeah, you're doing this, right? But yeah, I loved it. I love doing that. And it makes people feel successful.
Yeah.
And that's what I want people to feel in yoga. Like, this is for me. I belong here. I can participate because they can.
Definitely.
So, Diane, are there any differences in building a diverse and inclusive community in your online community compared to an in-person community? And what are the challenges of doing both of those?
I think, for me personally, it's easier to build a diverse community online because I think people are afraid to walk into a space, right? Am I going to be accepted here? Am I going to be able to do it? Will there be anybody that looks like me? These are some of the concerns that come up for some people, not everybody. But I find online there's lots of groups out there, like Facebook groups that are very diverse already, who are interested in movement. There's this one on Instagram that I follow called Brown and Black Bodies in Motion. And it's just a bunch of people in brown and black bodies moving that we don't often see in mainstream media because we don't really focus on people of color or health in ethnic groups. We really focus on wellness as a luxury, right? I'm going to the spa, I get to go to the chiropractor, things that not everybody can afford. So I like to post in those groups so that they can come to Yoga Stay and they can see that there are people that look like you who are teaching. So I find it easier that way. For a long time, I found that yoga spaces have been primarily fair skin or white spaces. And a lot of people feel uncomfortable coming there, or there was this whole idea that black people don't do yoga. And just this week, I was noticing that the Black Teachers Yoga Alliance was at Kripalu this week, and they were celebrating black bodies on the mat. And we were seeing, I never saw so many black yoga teachers in my life. One of my friends, Dana Smith, who has Yes Yoga Has Curves, that's her business in Maryland, she was there and she was sharing some of the history of yoga, some of the comedic history of yoga, so that people of color can see that they're connected to this practice. Because ordinarily we think of South Asian people of color connected to the practice, and we feel maybe that this is something that black folks don't do. And so to see that and to see that history and to see that shared on the internet, hopefully it will encourage more people of color that this is for them as well. So I thought that was really cool.
Very cool. Yeah. I think too, with like the internet and accessibility, that we have like this really cool platform as well, because I feel like for so long when it came to making yoga classes more inclusive or more available, that the solution was, oh, let's offer a donation-based class and nothing else would change. It would be usually in the middle of the day at a time when a lot of people couldn't make it in, you know, the same neighborhoods for the same, you know, period of time, the same types of classes. And I know those classes were very poorly attended when I taught them, just simply because of all of those factors. And that didn't seem to really be a solution. But when we have this access online and when we have this greater reach and when we have these new communities that we can connect with and these new people that we can meet, like that's how I discovered your work was online. I think I read a blog post that you wrote and I said, ooh, I like her. And I emailed you immediately. And yeah, it's just, that's a really good positive.
I think so too. I think making yoga accessible, the internet's the way to go, because you can have an internet connection at the library. Where was I? I was in Boulder one time, and it was just free everywhere. Like, you could just tap into internet anywhere.
That's so cool.
Right? So that's a little bit more accessible than a $20 drop-in class on a Thursday at noon in a town nowhere close to you. And oftentimes, yoga studios will put their new yoga teachers in there. So they're in teacher training, and they're not quite done yet. So they may not know how to work with diverse bodies. So it's kind of like hard. It's hard to offer something so diverse when you have a teacher who may be really inexperienced. You show up, it's not what you thought it is, so you don't come back.
So that's one of the main benefits of teaching online and online yoga. Can we talk a little bit about the dark side of the yoga internet?
Oh, my goodness.
And how do we deal with trolls and with negative comments and with behavior that's, you know, just plain un-yogic?
Yeah, the beauty of social media and the interwebs and the internet is everybody has a voice. The problem with social media and the internet is everybody has a voice, and some people use their voice for evil. And I don't read the comments anymore unless somebody says, oh, you should read the comments, because you could have 100 positive comments and you have that one nasty person who's an expert on yoga in your body, apparently. This is not yoga. Why aren't we talking about the breath? This is an exercise class. This isn't yoga. I think our view of the physical practice of yoga is very narrow. And if we really want to look at the history of asana, a lot of it stems, like a lot of the current asana we play with now isn't necessarily sacred. An article that you guys had written that just, I thought everybody needs to read this.
Linking to in show notes. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you. And that the yoga part of yoga isn't what you do on the mat. It's what you do in the world. It's not a selfish practice that's just about you. It's a practice about unity. And if you can't support somebody who's trying to offer something to a broader population, then shut your mouth. Like, nobody's interested. And my favorite quote is by Brené Brown that says, unless you're in the ring with me, getting your ass kicked, your feedback, I'm not interested in your feedback. And that's the way it is. And when you're, if you talk to experts, people that we consider yoga experts, you don't see them tearing each other down.
No.
You don't. Everybody has something to offer. And if you don't like what you're seeing, then click on something else. Like, your negative comment isn't necessary or interesting. You know, and that really is more of a reflection of the troll than it is of what you're doing. So everything with a grain of salt, or just plain don't read the comments. You know, be in your bubble there.
It can be so easy to forget, too, that, like, the people who put things out online, especially when it comes to article and video content, when they're not right there in front of you, like, these are people. These are people who worked really, really hard to give something to the world, often for little or
free.
No money.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, it's a gift. If you don't want it, you don't have to take it, but don't be mean about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm over trolls. Like, I just think I'm all for constructive criticism. Like, I think I was doing a class online, and I had hot lights on, and I was starting an asthma attack. I didn't take my asthma medicine before, so I was having a hard time catching my breath, but I'm like, I'm going to focus on breathing and moving through it. And somebody said on my page, your class was really beautiful. Sounds like you were out of breath. You might want to slow down your practice. And I mean, look how nice. I mean, she could have said, you know what, blah, 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 and you're going too fast, and I can't hear your breath. But instead, they reflected it really nicely. Like, language and the way we talk to each other is one of the most implicit ways that we can continue discrimination or separatism, right? The way we speak to each other is really important. And if you have something valid to say, think about the way you're saying it, right?
Yeah.
What is your intention? And again, it's more about impact than your intention. There's a really great way to say something, and then there's a trolley way to say something, and then that's more reflective of you. Why are you so unhappy that you have to project?
So, Diane, speaking in that, do you have any tips for commenting etiquette?
Yeah.
If you're going to comment at somebody,
because sometimes words can get misconstrued, right?
Yes.
Like you could have a good intention, but maybe it doesn't come across that way, and you didn't realize it, and yeah.
So, how do you convey your intentions? And two, what do you do when someone misconstrues your intentions?
You know what? I've come to on the internet, just admit if I'm wrong. You know what? What I said was kind of shitty. So I apologize. What I actually meant was this. And I take ownership for hurting your feelings, right? Because that's the thing with text messages and the internet. You can never tell the tone or the intention sometimes. But if you hurt somebody's feelings or I get a comment, or often if I get a nasty comment, I'll say, exactly what you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Or I rephrase what they said to me as a question. So what you'd like me to do is this? And then if I'm going to respond, most times I don't bother to respond, but I just reframe whatever they said in the form of a question. And most times they don't comment because they know they were just being nasty. Does that answer the question?
Yeah. I think basically it comes down to when you're commenting, don't say something to someone online that you wouldn't also say to that
person. To their face. Yeah. And that's the problem with online, because people can hide behind their moniker or their avatar and say all kinds of nasty things that you know full well that if you saw them in person, you wouldn't say. So if I were going to talk about etiquette, I would go back to what your mom told you when you were a kid. If you don't have anything nice to say, maybe you should just shut up. That's what my mother said. But we know there's a nicer way to say it. Like, really, what is the point of tearing people down? This whole practice is about lifting people up. And I commented to somebody on your live streaming class the other day who, to me, had a lot of time to be watching and critiquing yoga classes. And I said that very thing. If you're not here to uplift and add support to this process, then go do something else. Ride your bike or get a job or whatever. Like, do something else. This is not helping humanity.
I mean, that said, we always appreciate feedback and everything, but be nice about it.
Be constructive. Make
yeah.
it useful feedback.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
as opposed to just being mean.
Yeah.
For the sake of being mean, if you see something that you think could have improvement, sure, give feedback. But think about the way you're going to say it. You can give critical feedback in a way that people are going to hear it, or you can give critical feedback in a way that closes people's minds. So you need to decide, do you want to be heard or do you want to be mean?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Do you want to be heard or do you want to be mean?
You just want to be mean.
Yeah. So speaking of learning online, are there any teachers or any classes or any resources that were really revolutionary for you as a teacher and with your practice, or even just a cool variation or something that you learned online recently?
I watch a lot of the YI videos, and I have a secret obsession. Well, it's not a secret now, with Doug Keller. A lot of the variations that I've learned have been part of his teachings and courses I've taken with him. He often comes to Farmington Hills, Michigan, which is not very far from me, and I get to take maybe a week long immersion or a 3-day immersion with him. And he really taught me about breaking things down and about how different things look in bodies. Because I don't know if you take your standard 200-hour training, they show you standard poses. This is how we do Warrior II, or this is what we need to be looking for. But what if people have tight shoulders or frozen shoulders or a knee injury or is missing a limb? How do you deal with any of that? So he was really great at what I call prop asana, really showing people how to use props. I really learned how to improve my headstand practice by taking a course with him. And I love all his materials. I read everything he puts out. I stalk him on Facebook. he's one of my favorite teachers ever. I also like Anna Guest-Jelly. She was the first teacher I ever saw who was in an abundant body and who was unapologetic about it. This is me. This is me doing yoga. I invite you to be in curvy yoga. And those were the people that were among the biggest influences. And then there was Anna Saro, which I spent 10 years of my life immersed in that. And as much as everything that's gone down, the philosophy, I should say the asana and the physical, you know, the way that we get into poses, the alignment technology really helped me have confidence in teaching so that when somebody showed up to my studio who is in a wheelchair and I had this happen, she called every studio in town and nobody returned her phone call. Just fear and not knowing what to do. And I thought even if she came into my studio and we had a moment to breathe together or I could teach her some pranayama, I thought that's yoga. If I could maybe have her not look at her body as an obstacle or not look at it as something that she had to fight against, then I was going to be doing a yoga practice. And so I feel like that training really helped me because I thought, okay, I'll look at her in the chair and I'll see, does she need help with her shoulders? I'll figure it out. And she practiced with me for about 5 years at the studio. And when she came in, she had a lot of upper body mobility. And we did a lot of visualization of what would it feel like? Let's just move energy into her legs, even though, you know, because they're still energetically there. So we played with a lot of that. And she thanked me for being the only person who ever got back to her. And yes, yoga was for her too. She ended up writing a blog post about it for Elephant Journal. It just opened the world that people sitting in a wheelchair with no mobility in the latter half of their body still can benefit from a yoga practice if they're not doing Chaturanga and if they're not doing Warrior Two. There's more to it than that. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think the internet has, like, in so many ways, like, just shown us that we're not alone and that there's so many people out there who have similar interests, who have similar backgrounds, who have similar abilities and
who have information they want to share. And I'm grateful for the internet because if you go on YouTube and you type in yoga, there's all kinds of videos out there that can help you explore stuff, right? And it shows you a lot of different people doing yoga, which is important.
So, Diane, this is a personal interest question. What are your thoughts on dudes and men in the online yoga community? Because really, you don't see, well, as a yoga videographer, the ratio of male models to female models is like 95% to like 1. How do you, I guess, get men more involved or more into yoga in that kind of sense?
Yeah, it's tough. I would like to see more men who aren't yoga celebrities, just everyday dudes doing yoga. And the most exciting thing for me with yoga and men on the internet is when the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl and they have a yoga teacher and they do yoga. Because apparently football players are like our model of masculinity. Oh, he plays football. He's ultra masculine. Oh, and he does yoga. And I think that actually opened the door because they attributed winning the Super Bowl to their yoga practice. They said it helped them focus better and they felt better in their bodies. So unfortunately, we don't see enough men in yoga and we need to put more images. Like whenever I see yoga looking overly feminized, I always ask, where are the dudes, right? Where are the guys? There are guys out there doing yoga. There's lots of professional famous people doing yoga. So if we could only get some pictures of that, because we're this celebrity obsessed culture. If you know your favorite celebrity does yoga, then all of a sudden you're interested in yoga.
That I started practicing yoga when I was about 17 because I heard Madonna did it.
I was just going to say, there was a big bump in yoga when Madonna started doing yoga, and then all of a sudden everybody was interested because that's how we are. And I think it's unfortunate that in mainstream yoga media, we don't feature men. We just don't, unless, like I said, they're a yoga celebrity and they're really well known. Because think of all the male teachers that you possibly can think of right now who are online. I can think of maybe 5 that I see regularly, right? Like, I don't really see just average dudes. When I had my studio, we had a class for men. Because I noticed that my friend brought her husband to class, and she's a former gymnast, so she could do all this stuff. And he couldn't do all this stuff. And he was actually getting frustrated because this became competitive for him. And she was in headstand and he pushed her over because he was annoyed that he couldn't do it either. So I thought maybe if we have people, men who are of like equal ability in the class, maybe there won't be this competitive nature. But he came to 2 classes and then he was out because his wife was like showing him up, right? I liked it when I had my studio that Alan, my husband, came to classes. And I'd park him right in front with his tight hamstrings and his tight hips so that people could see this is what a yoga body looks like. It's just not feminine and young and super flexible and super strong. That's not the only people who participate in the practice. So, Kyle, I would encourage you to put pictures of yourself online to disrupt, this is my favorite thing to say, to disrupt the constant pictures of only women doing yoga.
Now, Diane told you, now you have no excuses.
Wow. What else I like, Diane, when we were filming yesterday, you did a class for absolute beginners.
Yes.
And we used an absolute beginner to model for the class, one of our editors, Amanda, video editors, that is. And when I was filming this class, I remember thinking, you know, this would have been great to film or to have 3 or 4 years ago when I started here. Because, like, for me, I didn't take a yoga class until I was super depressed and there was a live music class going on, and I love music, and, you know, so that got me into it. But, like, it was always somewhat discouraging seeing people model who, you know, like, Kat, who can do all kind of amazing poses, and then thinking, you know, there's no way I can get into that. And just getting over the initial
fear,
yeah,
and anxiety
was really tough.
And part of your practice, Kat, somebody told me this in the office today, you're a dancer. So dancers are pretty much body aware. When dancers come into my class, I say, oh, okay, you're a dancer, so a lot of this stuff is going to come easy to you. And then there's a person next to a dancer who maybe has had a very limited physical activity in their life, and they're like, well, she can do splits. Why can't I? She's about my age. She looks to be about my, you know what I mean? That constant comparison. And I know when people come to yoga, a lot of times they just jump into a class that's at a time slot that's available to them. So it might be vinyasa too, and we're going to learn handstand today. Meanwhile, you have never done a yoga class before, but you came to this class because the time worked with your schedule. And that's what I ran across a lot of the time when I owned my studio, is that people would have no yoga experience and show up to a super advanced class. So I was grateful for that, because it forced me to teach progressively. It forced me to go, okay, this is a beginner and this is my super advanced person over here. I can't slow the whole class down for the one person who's the beginner, but I can offer steps. I can say, step one, stay here. Step two, go here. Step three, go here. And this is a technique I had learned from a teacher I really love, Christina Sell, who's brilliant at breaking down asana, just brilliant. And I think that was really a good way to have a multi-level class, because let's be honest, in today's world, a mixed-level class is really an advanced class. It really leans more to a more advanced class than to a beginner class. So I was a big fan of intro to yoga. I used to run an intro to yoga for 5 weeks, and I would run it continuously, and then I would put 3 beginner classes on the schedule. So you would come and learn how to do the poses, learn how you should feel in your body, when to acknowledge pain, all that stuff. And then you had your homework was to get to 2 other classes during the week to reinforce what you learned. And I found that really helped students see progression in their practice and feel comfortable coming to classes. And then their last week assignment was just to go to any class they wanted.
That's so cool. That's a great, I'm sure a lot of teachers listening will really benefit from that. So thank you for that, that little business tip. You know, one thing that I was thinking about after you asked that question, Kyle, is I think sometimes as teachers, we can be overly cautious in some ways, like kind of maybe almost like overprotective parents. Like, I think we're so afraid of maybe leaning toward the side of safety that we're afraid to show something that's not perfect. We think that, oh, if this alignment doesn't look perfect, then somebody's going to try it and somebody's going to get hurt. And that's a comment that we even get on our site sometimes. Oh, that person's alignment's not perfect. Well, they're going to get hurt. And I think we can kind of step away from that a little bit, because it's worth it to make yoga more accessible to maybe, I don't want to say, you know, risk anyone getting hurt, but I don't think that that's what we're doing at all. I think that the human body has so many different ways that it can move, and no movement is inherently bad, and bodies are so diverse and practices are so diverse that we really need to start showing that diversity. If I'm in a lunge and I'm doing the very best as I can, and, you know, maybe my knee is coming past my ankle a little bit, well, if I do that 100 times in a row every single day, that's probably not going to be the best thing for my knee, but if I do that once and I'm learning and I'm trying and someone sees a picture of another person who's learning and trying and, hey, that person looks like me and they're trying their best, well, then you can just move from there and it doesn't have to be perfect. And the images that we use to depict yoga, they don't have to be, you know, I'm doing scare quotes with my fingers, but they can't see, perfect.
Right, right. Oh, and I think it's just another way to body shame somebody.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it gives this whole hierarchy, well, I know better than you and I'm going to tell you what's wrong with your alignment, even though we're really, as teachers and as students, feeling how this feels in our body. And it's true, you know, maybe once in a while your knee comes past your toe, and that even happens in the best classes with the best alignment. Sometimes you're just not paying attention, but you have to give people the benefit of the doubt, and you'll adjust anything or offer instruction if it's critical or if it's going to cause injury. But you're right. I think a lot of times on Instagram, I just post wherever I am in a pose. And when I teach, I tell my students, we did a tutorial on, what did we do on the wall? The flying splits one.
Oh, Ekapada Kundanyasana too. Which
saying,
like
Ekapada Raja Kapatasana. I keep
Diane
saying
rocks
that.
At.
I keep saying that instead of that. Yeah, Kundanyasana. People will like to pick apart everything about this. Now I have a block underneath my rib cage. I'm using the wall. My leg isn't exactly straight. You know, I'm pressing weight into my hands, but I'm figuring this out. So cut me some slack. I've been working on that pose for most of my life, and that's as good as it gets, and I managed not to injure myself. Once I did a headless headstand, and I put it up on, I think, social media, and somebody was like, your arms are splayed, and this is going on, and that's going on, and this is going on, and I just turned around and I said, I've been doing this for 20 years, and so far, so good, right? So it may look like my arms are splayed, but actually my arms are fat, and that's what you're actually seeing. But, you know, she's the expert on my body, but it's just, I think, another way to shame people. Like, and I kind of liked stepping away from Anasara for that reason, because we were hyper aware of perfect alignment. And there really is no such thing. There's alignment for Kat's body, and there's alignment for Diane's body. And I'm not an expert in what the alignment is for Kat's body, so I don't get to just randomly comment. I can say to somebody, have you ever tried doing it this way, just out of curiosity, and notice how this feels in your body? But how dare I just become an expert on what your pose looks like?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Amen.
Amen.
Totally. Thank you so much, Diane, for sharing all of that wisdom and insight and information that
and
you have.
And my arrogant opinion.
Thank you. I love your opinions. You make our podcast more interesting.
Thank you.
And before we go today, do you have anything else that you want to plug for listeners? Any projects that you're working on? Anything that you'd like to direct them to?
Sure. I'm on the road. So my first stop is, of course, Yoga International. And for the first time ever, I'll be presenting at Kripalu in a Body Love conference. So I'll be with Sean Korn, Cindy Lee, myself, Chelsea Jackson. I believe Ralph Gates is part of it as well. So there's a bunch of us presenting at Kripalu, and that's in November. So all of that information is up on my website at dianebondiyoga.com.
And listeners, if you have any questions that you'd like us to pass along to Diane for you, or any questions for Kyle and I, any topic ideas, you can send those to yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And Kyle, tell the good people listening at home about our intro and outro.
Our score is by Austin Joy.
Nice.
Thanks,
Austin
guys.
Joy.
Namaste.